Instead of bringing the nation and the world together in ways that past global crises often did, the COVID-19 pandemic has served instead to alienate many people, one from the other, and only deepen divisions along tribal lines of political and religious ideologies. Religiously driven objections to vaccinations and even to medical research don't influence only those who hold such beliefs. They bleed into the political culture, especially when one religious ideology has dominance in our secular culture. For a look at ways this plays out and why it matters, I am really happy to be joined by the Reverend Monty Self, Senior Staff Chaplain and Clinical Ethicist at Baptist Health Medical Center in Little Rock, Arkansas. Monty, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited you're here. In your recent columns for Good Faith Media, you write from a perspective that I think is essential to amplify. Fear-driven objections to research and vaccination get transformed into dogma if we're not careful. Is that a fair way to put that?
I think it would be a very accurate way to put it. Oftentimes, going back to 2008 and even back to the 1990s, we saw a lot of religious objections to vaccination. But oftentimes when we ask questions about that, there were no rational responses. It was, I have a religious objection to the flu shot, but no one could explain why they had a religious objection to the flu shot. We do have over 11,000 employees throughout the entire state of Arkansas and parts of Oklahoma. But way back, even when we had instituted an annual flu shot mandate back in 2009, we had employees that would have religious objections. But when we asked them what that objection was, what's the doctrinal reason, what's the scriptural reference, what's the moral implication, rarely could that employee or affiliate actually explain what it was. It was assumed there was a religious objection, but in reality, we could almost never find them. Now, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. There are actual religious, there's a very few religious groups in the world that have theological or moral objections to different specific vaccines.
Yeah. The headline is Why Many Adults Cite Religion for Vaccine Snub. What are some of the answers you explore?
One of the first things, and I discovered this from a study, and I'm sorry I can't cite it, about 7 years ago that was done by the Pew Center related to vaccination, religion and vaccinations. And more specifically, there was a recent study that came out a few weeks back from the Public Religion and Research Institute that looked at different religious groups and the faith groups in the United States and how they felt about vaccinations. So they the most notably they asked white Roman Catholics how vaccine resistant they are. 73% said they were accepting of the vaccine. 28% said they were hesitant or definitely wouldn't. But then when they talked to self-identifying white Roman Catholics who rarely attended, the numbers changed to 67% accepted, 33% rejected the idea of vaccination. That type of phenomena really becomes apparent when you look at different types of mainstream African-American Protestants, where you see of self-identifying mainstream African-American Protestants that attended church, 57% were accepting, 43% were not. But of the same group that seldom or never attended, that was 43% accepted, 59% not. Now for the big one, self-identifying white evangelical Protestants. of the ones that regularly attended services, 43% were vaccine accepting, 57 were not. Of the ones that didn't, 48% were accepting, 51% were not. Now, what we see from all of this is of those religious groups I mentioned, there is a higher percentage that is vaccine reluctant. Now, these are all groups that don't spend a lot of time preaching about healthcare from the pulpit or talking about healthcare issues from the pulpit. But you see a higher ratio of vaccine reluctance among people that identify with that faith group but don't go to church on a regular basis. It's more what the Pew Center saw many years ago and the public Religions Research Institute saw recently is it's more of a theological education problem. We don't know why and what we believe. Therefore, when we are faced with the question, do I get a vaccine? Our response is, well, my religion is opposed to that. Mm-hmm. And that individual may actually not know what their religion has to say about it. So for many years, you know, for a couple of years, I had the opportunity of sitting down with people who were vaccine reluctant. And I would ask them, okay, if we're happy to respect a religious objection, what exactly is that rejection? And when I sat with them, oftentimes they would say, they would give me an explanation. And then when we went to look at the scriptures, it wasn't there. Or they would say, well, my religion believes in healing, healing through prayer. And then we would have a discussion over previous vaccines that the individual had gotten or other types of healthcare intervention like mechanical ventilation or hemodialysis. In those cases, it becomes a consistency problem. And I would sit with them and we would work through what exactly do you believe? Not just what do you believe, not just what does your preacher say? What do you believe? Okay, why? And when we sorted it out, there are very few Christian groups in this country that actually have a theological or a moral objection to the vast majority of vaccines on the market.
These days, I tend to assume politics is behind pretty much any such statistic.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that. I was talking with my wife last night, and I don't know why this didn't hit me before, but if you go back to 2019, and I'm not trying to be negative towards President Trump, but one of his big agenda items at, I believe, the 2019 State of the Union was pushing for a right to try law, which would be legislation passed by Congress that would allow people with end-stage medical conditions that had terminal conditions that they could try experimental drugs without being part of an experimental research study. The same folk who push for that are also a lot of the same folk who are on the vaccine hesitancy side, arguing that the COVID-19 vaccines are experimental, which becomes what I think we hit upon when you talk about politics, because we do see a divide between Republicans and Democrats. The vast majority of Democrats, I think less than 7% of registered Democrats are classified as being vaccine hesitant, where almost half of Republicans are vaccine hesitant. It's kind of hard to not say there is a political divide, especially when you look at the religious numbers, knowing that a good portion of Catholics and mainstream Protestants are Democrat and Republican, where a high percentage of white evangelicals are Republican.
Monty, knowing that background, are there strategies to lessen the divide in the interest of public health and the common good? I mean, these are values deeply ingrained in all of our religious traditions.
Right. I think one of the things, and I preach about this all the time at the hospital, is us in public health and the Center for Disease Control and the NIH, the Food and Drug Administration, and both President Biden's and President Trump's administration, our public officials don't do a great job of doing public health education. And then that doesn't then translate into in the pulpit, our rabbis, imams, and preachers, they don't do a great job of actually explaining any of this stuff. My wife, and I always tell her frequently, said, no, people don't read my columns at Good Faith Media because I'm the smartest guy. They read it because I'm not very smart, and I can and I take these complicated statistics and make it so someone who's a college freshman and a sophomore can understand it. I think we as faith leaders are doing a poor job educating the public, saying, this is what's going on. Here are the facts. Here, let me give you the CDC and the NIH websites. So when the public is hit with the question, do I get a vaccine or not, they go to their emotional response, which is often an uninformed religious response, and more frequently than not, it's a political response.
Marty, you also recently wrote about fear-based resistance to scientific research. What should we be considering when we think about preparations for the next pandemic and the one after that?
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up. Not to do self-promotion, but one of the things in my columns for Good Faith Media, I always like to tell historic stories. So I talk about the Russian flu from the 1800s, the 1918 H1N1 flu, the H5N1 flu, the polio epidemic. One of the big problems that we keep making as society globally is we face these pandemics and we do the same stuff over and over and over again. One of the folks that I work with thought it was hilarious. They read one of my columns and they're like, are you telling me this fight over masks happened in 1919 just like it is today? Is this fight over social distancing? I was like, and if you look at the history of the 1918 pandemic and us, they almost had the same fights in the same months as their pandemic progressed. We keep doing the same stuff over and over again. There was a big, the U.S. government did a big study following, and I'll mess the date up, the 1956 or 1954 flu pandemic, looking at how can we improve things next time. They did a big old study looking at that, and it sat on a shelf. We did a big study following the H1N1, the 2008 H1N1 avian pandemic, and it sat on a shelf. Literally, at the beginning of this pandemic, I sat in meetings going back to February, March, and April stating, we have a problem. What are we going to do about allocation of resources? And many professional ethicists had to go find emergency disaster plans. So in answer, all of that to answer your question is we don't pay attention to anything we did in the past. We need to seriously look at the last three global pandemics and say, what can we do in the future? Because in 10, 20, or 30 years from now, when we have the next global virus that we don't need to have a debate over social distancing, wearing masks, we don't need to have a discussion about whether it's okay to have a vaccine that we tested it with the use of stem cells that go back 70 years. We need to take what we learn in the present and make sure we have a real plan for the future that the public understands.
So where do religious ethics come into conflict with science in these realms?
Well, my father ran a hospital lab for decades. And so when he and I talk about science and religion, and he's a very religious individual, I always hate talking about science versus religion, because I think it gives us the wrong impression that science is against religion and religion is against science. But a lot of times that question of how do our religious ethics get played out? And just to give some easy illustrations, there are actual religious objections to medical interventions. that are scientifically based. I talk with the hospital liaisons for the Jehovah's Witnesses every week. We'll talk about a case, or we make sure they're folks. They have a legitimate theological argument. Now, I disagree with that argument. I don't read the Bible that way, but I understand what their hermeneutic and their exegesis interprets those passages. That's their religious position, and I'm willing to respect that and uphold it. With regard to vaccines, there are similar, very rare religious objections that you can run across. In our country during the polio epidemic, when we first rolled out the polio vaccines in the 1960s, it was the Dutch Reform Movement that protested that vaccines would interfere with God's divine providence. Mm-hmm. Upon reflection over the next 10 years, the leaders of those different groups said, you know what? Just as easily, God's divine providence created the vaccine. And there are very few that still hold that position. But we do run into actual legitimate theological arguments. What I see is it comes down to a theological education. I don't want people to do clinical religious-based ethics like we're in the scholastic period and we're arguing over the number of angels on the head of a pin. But we need to really look at what's our argument, what are the facts. I took my first clinical ethics, bioethics course with Dr. Ben Mitchell, who was at the Christian Life Commission for many, many years and then recently retired from Union University.
Right.
While he's much more conservative than I am, he gave me one piece of advice that I'll remember to my grave. Good ethics starts with good facts.
Mm.
And we so often, on religious ethics, we go with emotions versus what's our actual religious argument? What are the scientific facts?
You know,
where are they in conflict?
You know, I can't separate science and prayers. People who are praying for good health or getting well, it seems to me like scientists would be their friends because these are the people that are going to find the ways in which to answer their prayers. Is that crazy?
No, I would have to agree with you, and I'll tell you why. So most of my time, I do clinical ethics for our 11 hospitals. Pretty much every day between 2 and 5, I'm the oncology chaplain for the Baptist Health Medical Center, Little Rock. And I've been doing that for almost 15 years now. I pray for healing more than probably anybody I know with, you know, half my patients almost daily. And many of them, they'll ask me to pray for scientists. They'll ask me to pray for the doctor. They'll ask me to pray for researchers, pray for pharmaceutical companies that they get a breakthrough. And we also pray that God reaches down. I've seen things over the years that I can't explain. They can only be explained as God's divine hand moving. But then I've also seen miraculous things take place in every month I come to work, I have to look at a doctor and say, we can do that now. And you look at a lot of that, some of these breathtaking scientists that are coming up with new therapies, they are highly religious individuals. Mm-hmm. I like to remind my university students, I say, don't get bogged down in this science versus religion, because if you go read the works of Francis Bacon, you can read his scientific works, but then he's got this whole other set of stuff that reads like they are theology tomes. He was just as theological and religious as he was every bit a scientist.
Monty, we're out of time. It went quickly, but before we go, what can our listeners do, if anything, to stay informed on these matters and contribute to a responsible approach?
Well, I would say be informed. It bemoans me that our government doesn't communicate with the public as well as I would like. The information is not as accessible as I would like, but the Mayo Clinic runs a COVID-19 information page. that literally you can go see how well your state, how compliant your state is with the vaccination. John Hopkins still runs their COVID-19 tracker, tracking infections and deaths. The CDC has a plethora of information about the vaccines. If you want to know all the adverse effects to a COVID-19 vaccine, it's all there. You just have to bog through and pull up the articles and read through that. I tell people who read my columns, I said, look, don't believe me. Don't believe the guy on CNN. Don't believe the guys at Fox News. Go get the actual journal articles from the New England Journal of Medicine. Go get the journals from the Journal of the American Medical Association. Read it for yourself, because most of them can be traced back to CDC studies or the pharmaceutical industry studies, which are public access.
The Reverend Monty Self is senior staff chaplain and clinical ethicist at Baptist Health Medical Center in Little Rock, Arkansas. His commentary appears regularly on Good Faith Media at www.goodfaithmedia.org, with which we are currently developing an ongoing partnership. Monty, those things that you've talked about are difficult issues to address, but you have done it responsibly and effectively. Thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to join y'all today.